The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hello, welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
All right. So before we get started, just a couple of quick announcements. The Apologetics Canada Conference is coming up.
This weekend?
Yeah.
And I think that we have about 30 seats left to sell.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this on the day it is released, the conference is tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we have very limited.
Now, a lot of people have been asking, okay, you know, we hear that the Apologetics Canada Conference does sell out, which has happened a number of times now. But they'll ask, well, can I still come? And the answer to that is yes, you can. We will still have a room available that will be simulcasted live into, and you can still have full access to breakout sessions and whatnot. So we do want to encourage you. You can still come.
All right.
We just want to make a quick shout out for all those listeners who've been with us over the years, or maybe you're a new listener and you're wondering, how can we partner with Apologetics Canada? One of the ways that you can partner with us right now is that Terry, who is our newest hire, is still seeking to be fully funded. I don't even know if you've got half of your funds yet, but we got a ways yet to go.
We got a ways.
Yeah. And we're looking for people that are like, you know what? I'd like to partner with Apologetics Canada. I'd like to help what you guys are doing. This would be a great way for you to help us. We have a number of projects on the go. And in fact, I want to tell you about one of those projects quickly. We were just contacted by a high school recently. I was there speaking, and the principal came up to me and said, you know what? We would love to see the Apologetics Canada Conference come to our high school. You know, we have a number of high school students that come, but we would love for all of our students to participate. And so the idea was talked about with taking the Apologetics Canada Conference that we've done over the last 7 years and helping this school and helping schools across Canada do this, where they can host their own conference at their school using our material from previous years and using their different classrooms as breakout sessions. So that's just, you know, one of many things that are coming down the pipe as we're constantly busy helping engage churches, schools, you name it, across Canada. And we need lots of help. And so this is one of the areas where Terry is participating and helping in these different projects that come up and that we're working on. And so we need Terry. He's been a vital help, and we'd just love it if you would consider partnering with us by partnering with Terry.
Terry, so do you have something for us from the bowels of the internet?
The bowels, way, way down. Yep. First one I have here, it says, this one really quite shocked me. I don't know why, but it did. It says YouTube tops 1 billion hours of video a day on paced Eclipse TV.
Wow.
1 billion hours of video a day.
So everyone watching YouTube, like all the hours put together in a day.
Correct.
It's over a billion hours now?
A billion.
And I would say that most of that has got to be young adults. You know, each year we have a young adult intern that works with us. Mm-hmm. And I am amazed at the amount of YouTube that they will consume. Either they'll tell me about it, or I'll catch them watching it and you'll be like, you know, get back to work or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember we had one intern who would stay after work because he had internet access here. And he'd just watch YouTube videos and then he'd go home after a while, and it's unbelievable. We had to like kick him out.
So it says, go home. What has boosted this rate of watching is the algorithms personalizing user lineups.
That made no sense to me whatsoever.
No, because it's what you're watching, and then they'll suggest to you,
right?
Oh, what you could watch next.
Okay,
so you just keep on clicking.
Right? Gotcha.
It just keeps on clicking for the next one to watch.
See, I always get annoyed by that. You watch a YouTube video, and then it brings up a whole new list of videos. And you're like, I already saw one that I wanted to. Now I got to go back to find one of those other ones that I wanted to watch.
And the challenge there too is that it can, on a slightly more serious note, that can really create an echo chamber, right? Like if you are watching stuff that's like politics related or whatever, and you watch something, say, you know, like something that that's supportive of Donald Trump, then you'll keep getting stuff that's supportive of Donald Trump,
right,
rather than seeing the counter perspective.
Yeah, I mean, this honestly, before this past year, I had not watched YouTube, like very little. And then I got onto James Corden's Carpool Karaoke. And I liked that. And that kind of got me, got my foot in the door.
Terry, do you find yourself watching some YouTube these days?
A few. Yeah. I'm in there. I'm one of those people in the billions of hours, I guess.
Really? I'm not. I don't know what it is, but YouTube, the only time I go to YouTube is when I'm trying to change the oil on my car and I can't figure out where the, you know, oil filter is, you know, or I'm wondering. The how-to videos. Like, I love the how-to videos, but beyond that, or the occasional cat video that, you know, catches me off guard. Yeah. And I just can't say no to. But other than that, I haven't found myself spending too much time. What about you, Steve?
I actually watch a fair bit of YouTube, but I don't really watch it a lot of times. I just have it turned on. Like, for example, if I want to play some music while I'm working or whatever, I'll just have it on in the background, but I don't actually watch it. So I guess Facebook would probably consider that as just because, you know, they are streaming, if somebody's watching it. I'm like, no, I'm actually not. I'm just listening to it. And often there are a lot of YouTube videos that are just there for audio. Like, it has maybe a picture or two there, but it's like a 5-hour music mix or something like that. It's there.
Oh, that's interesting. So you'll listen to music mixes as well on.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Here's another one for you. Another all-time high. It says UFO sightings hit all-time high.
UFO sightings.
Yeah. So all within the last 100 years, 104,000 sightings have been reported. Uh-huh. But the increase within from 1980, there was only in 1980 there was only 5,000 sightings. In 2010, it jumped up to 45,000 sightings. What's interesting about this article is that a lot of these sightings is only within America. So if you go outside into the other world, very, very, very limited sightings. Yeah. That's interesting.
Oh, fascinating.
I find it fascinating as well that in history, you don't, you know, nobody's drawing these UFO sightings or anything else, right? You don't get UFO sightings historically. Now, I'm sure we're going to get an email from somebody going, you know, but what about this? You know, but it's not on the scale that we are seeing today. You know, what did you say? 45,000? Was that a year?
That was in 2010, 45,000.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's in America itself, it's 300 times more than any place else in the world.
Well, God bless America.
Yeah, I guess I'm also curious, like, what do they mean by UFO, right? Because UFO literally means unidentified flying object. So it could be anything, really. We're not necessarily talking about aliens and their saucers, flying saucers, right?
However, if you've ever watched a movie, Steve, you know that the first country of landing is the United States.
Yeah. And they're defending against these aliens, right?
Oh,
it's they're going to protect the whole world.
Well, either that or it's Johannesburg.
Have you guys seen that new movie called Arrival?
No, I have not.
No.
By the way, I won't say anything, but fantastic movie.
All right. Okay, well, with that, let's move on. We have a bit of a bizarre topic, I guess.
It is bizarre, Steve. Just say it.
Yeah. In fact, Andy came into the recording studio this morning, and he's like,
do I want to talk about this?
That's right. I noticed
this one's pretty close to home. The person in the article is.
Yeah, when I'm speaking on behalf of somebody else whose ideas are still pretty new to me, but from what I've read, my guess is that she'll say, well, yeah, you can't have more than two partners. It's not, you know, different people are different, she said. Because somebody raises the challenge, well, polyamory is psychologically damaging. And she responded by saying, different people are different. You know, some people are wrecked by sexual jealousy. Lots of monogamous people are wrecked by sexual jealousy. Other, you know, polyamorous people may not be.
I think she tries to make it quite normative, right? And she's trying to make it normative in the sense that...
You mean normal?
Normal, yeah. In the sense that you can have equal love to each of these partners. There's no hierarchical way in these relationships. But if you read some more on the internet, there is other people that place this hierarchical polyamory. Like, there's all different viewpoints of this.
Yeah.
One of the things I find on that note, Terry, is that especially in Hollywood right now, there are a number of actors such as Will Smith that are quite vocal about being in an open marriage and mm-hmm. is becoming more and more common.
Yeah. I have a friend on Facebook that I've known for a lot of years. He's a pretty vocal advocate of polyamory, and he'll often post articles about how, you know, science is showing that polyamory is actually helpful, it's actually beneficial to humanity, so on and so forth. Whenever I see that kind of stuff, I'm a little bit skeptical, so I don't really bother reading a whole lot of those. But Carrie Jenkins in the article also mentioned, she actually went, remember earlier I mentioned that short article that she wrote debunking some of these allegations? She had titled it Being the Only Ones, right? Because she thought this sort of thing is so very rare that surely we're the only ones, at least in the immediate area. But turns out there were people started approaching her at conferences and things like that, talking about how, you know, they have they think along the same lines. So this is more common than people.
I was listening to a podcast this week, and it has to do with this, and it kind of blew my mind. And it was kind of the way it was structured, in the sense that in the beginning, two women started talking, and then they go away, and then this guy starts talking. But he describes it as a hierarchical polyamory. What blew my mind is that when it comes to him talking, he starts describing these ladies. And the ladies are actually silicone-ordered women from Asia.
What?
So he has a relationship with two women
silicone, and
he's calling it polyamory as well.
Wow. You know, actually, that reminds me, there is this guy in Korea. I've seen this short, not a documentary, but I've seen maybe a news clip or something like that of this. Back then he was a kid. He was like maybe in like what's equivalent of grade 10 or something like that. He was in love with an anime character. He seriously had a wedding ceremony marrying this anime character. And I was just like, man, this guy is... I noticed a couple of things as I was reading this article, though, is that it's the deconstruction of categories, right? You combine this with something like, you know, the whole LGBTQ ideology. You put those two together. I mean, you could have multiple loves with anybody of any orientation, of any gender. I mean, it's just so wide open.
Wide open,
marriage becomes meaningless. And so I was... When I hear terms like open marriage, to me, it's just such a contradiction. It's like saying square circle, because marriage to me, by definition, is closed. It is an exclusive union of two people.
And well, that was what was going through my mind as well. As soon as you start hearing them talk, you begin to realize that they've deconstructed to such a degree that there's nothing left. It has become very meaningless in many ways. In that, especially, what you see is humanity at its base level in a very narcissistic way, saying, I'm going to do whatever brings me pleasure, whatever I think is best for me. And for me, I can't be committed to one partner, so I'm going to open myself up to as many partners.
We're just
going
to see more forms of this come to life, you know, more and more as we move into the future. I mean, our society is moving away from this God morality and forming their own morality. So anything goes, right?
Right. And it was, in the book of Judges, we see that over and over again, right? People doing what they saw was good in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. And this is not a pretty picture when people start forming their own. I mean, you could have something like Stalin and Mao, or my concern is, given this sort of deconstructionism and everything, how can you justifiably condemn what they did? That's my concern, right? If you actually break down all of these categories, including moral categories, man, then you actually have to settle with the idea that you are actually, or you should be okay with what Hitler and Mao and Stalin did.
Well, doesn't it seem to you that the underlying morality, or even the underlying ethic that's at play here, is whatever feels right to you?
Exactly.
You know, how's a human being meant to flourish? You know, what's going to lead to human flourishing? And what we see in the Bible is that God is giving instruction as to what's going to lead to your flourishing and what's not. And it's not just your personal flourishing. It's also the other person's flourishing, and particularly in a marital relationship, your child's flourishing.
Have you noticed that, though, in the article? There are no mentions of children.
Of course,
right. I haven't seen any mention of children. And I think that's my concern, too, is that when we talk about polyamory and things like that, it's often all about the adults, right? And their fulfillment, their desires. A case in point is, and I mentioned this a number of times before, is no-fault divorce. When no-fault divorce came into the picture, marriage wasn't about children anymore, right? Because I'm looking at my two kids and thinking, okay, let's just assume, you know, I had multiple romantic partners in the picture. What kind of confusion would they create for my kids, and what kind of sense of security would that give to our children?
And it's one of those interesting aspects where self-sacrifice is almost, in our culture, it's not almost, it is seen as a negative thing. You know, that you shouldn't need to sacrifice, you know, that this life is all about you getting everything that you want and can get, and that you'll again, assuming that you know what's best for yourself, you know, that you can pursue whatever you want and that's going to make you happy.
I would say that sacrifice is seen in a negative light in certain situations, not in all situations, but especially when it gets interlocked with an ideology like feminism, for example, the woman having to sacrifice her self-actualization and everything, you know, for the good of the husband or the family is not seen as a positive thing. But having said that, many people on the sort of leaning left on the political spectrum would say, of course we should open up our wallets to help the poor and needy and all of that sort of thing. That kind of sacrifice is okay, but except in this case, it's through the means of taxation by states using coercive powers or anything like that. But
I'm always interested in our response as Christians within our culture, because we seem to be becoming the minority, you know, in the sense of our viewpoint. I mean, really, why should people take our side or think about our side as a relationship between a man and a woman, right? How do we respond? A lot of people, Christian-wise, I think retreat. They want to put up walls, declare that this is a Christian nation. I'm probably talking more American than Canadian. But I mean,
I think it's true though in Canada, you often find this, you know, walls of sorts, you know, where you want to separate yourself more and more.
Do we just not have the confidence?
Well, I think one thing that goes through my mind is I have my Bible open here to 1 Corinthians, and it's always a good reminder for Christians to remember that this isn't new. That the Apostle Paul, for example, with the early church was dealing with many of the same issues that we're dealing with today. And in fact, if not worse, as he talks about
it, is uncanny how similar we are to the society back then.
Oh yeah,
early New Testament.
Yeah, and he talks even about how the church participated in things that the pagans wouldn't even participate in, because he, you know, here you have men that are taking his father's wife, things that are really debased. Right? It's interesting that you have this slide that always takes place, that this question of, well, you know, what is sexually permissible? Well, it's constantly, you know, it's like this, it's like sand, you know, it's just constantly eroding from under your feet as it becomes more and more debased, as you try to find out what, you know, more and more what's going to finally satisfy you, until you realize, well, nothing is. It's just going to leave you completely broken in the end, because, you know, everything was about you. And it's interesting that the biblical narrative is that life isn't all about you, that life is about God, and that God created you, and that God knows how you will best flourish. And the problem is that we are a broken people, and that we live in broken relationship with God, and we live in broken relationship with each other, which I think raises an interesting question I want to throw out at you guys real quick here. I think a lot of skeptics would push back on us and say, well, okay, it's interesting that you bring this up, but what about polygamy in the Bible?
Yeah, I mean, they can reference that for sure. Like, you know, Old Testament, look at these guys. But, I mean, we still have to go back to Genesis and the establishment of the man and the wife. And once we move through the Old Testament, I mean, we just don't, we see something that God did not intend whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, I've heard, what about the case of David, where, you know, God seems to be telling him, you know, I've given you all of these wives, right? And it seems then that God is actually instituting polygamy. I'm like, no, I don't think God's instituting polygamy. I would do the same thing. I would go back to Genesis and see the sort of the ideal picture of what a monogamous union is. And then everything else is just, again, falling away from the standard, right? Falling away from the ideal, which God tolerates. In the case of David, I would say that this is how kings and rulers in these societies, that's how they measured their success and things like that. And my interpretation of that is that God is saying, you know, I have given you all of this success, right? And yeah, he's using...
I've allowed it.
Right. And he's using these wives as a category.
It's interesting because with King Solomon, what you find is in Ecclesiastes, he talks about, listen, I took everything I could. I sought every sort of pleasure imaginable, from alcohol to work to success to big homes to even wives. And at the end of it all, he says, listen, I took everything I could and none of it satisfied me. And it's interesting. He constantly uses this idea of under the sun, none of this satisfied me. And you get this idea that there's something going on here, that the things of this life will leave you dissatisfied, longing for something more, that there's something above the sun, you know, that there's something greater that you were created for that will satisfy you. And I think it's interesting. This is one of the things I like about the Bible, is that the Bible doesn't shy away from telling you about how people got it wrong. And just because the Bible is descriptive doesn't mean that it's prescriptive. And I think that this is always important to understand when you're reading the Bible, is that you're reading a story of a broken, messed up people and a God who patiently loves them and is seeking to bring them back into a right relationship and seeking to show them how they were meant to flourish. And a people that are constantly pushing against what God says is good. And things haven't changed. We still live in a society, in a world of brokenness, that says, no, God, I don't trust that you understand marriage and that what will lead to my flourishing and my children's flourishing. And instead, I'm going to pursue what makes me happy and what I think is going to satisfy me.
Well, that's all the time that we have. And so thanks for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And we'll see you next week with more to think about.